Não faço cara nem pose, caminho na contramão. E quanto mais eu me envolvo, mais namoro a solidão. Ainda hoje lembrei das tuas risadas sem fim. E eu me questionei, rirão de mim ou pra mim. Se lambuzaram no doce, levaram o melhor que eu tinha. Enquanto a boca amarga, meu coração desalinha. Vocês me devem cada lágrima, cada desserviço. Devem meu suor, me devem cada gemido. Me devem cada lágrima, cada desserviço. Devem meu suor, me devem cada gemido.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student in high school, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
All that good stuff.
And that's what we're going to do today. Mm-hmm. So what have you been reading lately, Amelia?
I finished Fahrenheit 451 today.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't like how it ended.
Oh, I don't remember how it ended.
It felt very rushed.
Oh, so it was less about how it came to a conclusion, but how quickly it did?
Yeah, there was like, it seemed like there was a ton of other stuff they could have done with the character and the characters and the whole plot, and then it just ended. And it ended very abruptly in a way, like so abruptly that I almost thought like what they were saying was happening was a metaphor and it wasn't actually happening, but it was, and I was disappointed.
Aww. I've had that happen with books before where I'm either reading or listening and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, did that just happen? And then I go back and I'm like, oh yeah, that just happened. Did not make it up. But otherwise you enjoyed the book?
Yeah.
So that's Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. And interesting that you read that book recently, because this week is Banned Books Week.
Ooh.
And the American Library Association, their Office for Intellectual Freedom, compiles a list of the top 10 most challenged books each year in order to inform the public about censorship in libraries and schools. So they make this list of top 10 most challenged books, which is really just a snapshot of book challenges, because the surveys indicate that the majority of book challenges remain unreported and receive no media attention.
Huh.
So this is just a little snapshot of what was challenged in the past year. And just because it makes the banned books list does not mean it was actually banned. It means that there was an attempt at banning. So in some cases, the book maybe was removed from the shelves or from curriculum. In some cases, it was just challenged and remained in the curriculum. Sometimes libraries shift where they put a book in the library due to a banning or a challenge. But their top 10 this year, or actually it's a top 11. They went one more this year for some reason. But the top 11 most challenged books this year were George by Alex Gino. And the reasons given for challenging the book, it says, banned, challenged, and relocated because it was believed to encourage children to clear browser history and change their bodies using hormones, and for mentioning dirty magazines, describing male anatomy, creating confusion, and including a transgender character.
Huh.
The second book was A Day in the Life of Marlon Bundo by Jill Twiss, illustrated by E.G. Keller. The reasons, banned and challenged for including LGBTQIA plus content, and for political and religious viewpoints. I think that was kind of the point of the book.
yeah, I think so.
The third was the Captain Underpants series, written and illustrated by Dave Pilkey. The reasons: Ceres was challenged because it was perceived as encouraging disruptive behavior, while Captain Underpants and the sensational saga of Sir Stinks-a-Lot was challenged for including a same-sex couple. Hmm. I feel like Captain Underpants makes the list a lot.
It does, and I never understand why. Probably because I never read the books. I thought they were kind of dumb. But I love
their titles, though.
Yeah.
Captain Underpants and the Sensational Saga of Sir Stinks-a-Lot.
I mean, we love alliteration here.
Yeah. I think that's one of the shorter titles, too. Some of them are really long. Fun to say. Next up, number 4, is one of our Battle of the Books books, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. The reasoning given was banned and challenged because it was deemed anti-cop and for profanity, drug use, and sexual references.
I never ended up reading that book, so I wouldn't know.
It's a very good book. Number 5 is Drama, written and illustrated by Raina Telgemeier. Reasons: banned and challenged for including LGBTQIA+ characters and themes.
I read that one. It was really good.
It's great.
I like it much better than Smile, which is another one of her books, but that might just be because of my slight bias towards anything involving dentistry, because I'm very scared of going to, like, dentists.
Plus, they're different, because Smile is memoir, and Drama, while somewhat inspired by her childhood, is not about her life.
Oh.
So I feel like, you know, it gives her a little more freedom to decide where the story goes.
Yeah.
But it was a great book. They're both great, except for if you are against anything to do with dentistry.
Dentistry freaks me out. It was a good story, but, like, just the whole thing was like, I don't like teeth. I don't like to see teeth. It's scary to me.
I don't like to think about teeth being knocked out by face planting.
Yeah, exactly.
The concrete. Ooh. But anyways. Number 6 on the list is 13 Reasons Why by Jay Asher. The reason: banned, challenged, and restricted for addressing teen suicide. Number 7 is This One Summer by Mariko Tamaki, illustrated by Jillian Tamaki. Reasons: banned and challenged for profanity, sexual references, and certain illustrations. I loved that graphic novel. I don't remember the certain illustrations. I'm curious what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's kind of vague. It's almost scary. And I think 13 Reasons Why, the show, was also, like, under a lot of controversy, too.
Yeah. I think the show brought that one kind of back into the minds of people who want to ban materials from libraries.
Yeah.
Number 8 is the Skippy John Jones series, written and illustrated by Judy Schnockner. And reason: challenge for depicting stereotypes of Mexican culture. I've never read that series. The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, a longtime holder of a place in the top 10 list on Banned Books Week, was banned and challenged for sexual references, profanity, violence, gambling, and underage drinking, and for its religious viewpoint. Number 10 is This Day in June by Gail E. Pittman, illustrated by Christina Litton. Reason: challenged and burned for including, and burned, whoa. Oh yeah.
Wait,
I think I remember hearing about this, actually. Challenged and burned for including LGBTQIA+ content. Yeah, there's a guy that was upset that a library had all these books that included LGBTQIA+ content, and so borrowed the books and burnt them.
Wait, what book was this?
But he also filmed it, so he, like, basically turned himself in for destroying property.
Yeah, what book was this?
This Day in June by Gail E. Pittman. It's a picture book about, you know, Pride Month.
Oh, okay. That's very dramatic.
And number 11 is Two Boys Kissing by David Levithan. Guess why that was challenged? It was also and burned.
It was burned, too?
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of his little pile of books. Challenged and burned for including LGBTQIA+ content. And here's the secret. If you burn a library's material, if it's popular enough, they're just going to buy it again. So you're just giving the publisher and the author more money.
Yeah.
And encouraging them to make more books that you don't like.
I just can't believe he really went as far as to burn the books.
Yeah. Not as many as in Fahrenheit 451, but...
Yeah, there are almost no books in Fahrenheit 451, so he didn't go that far, but...
Yeah, so those were the top 11 for 2018. You'll notice a theme that a lot of people don't feel like libraries should have LGBTQIA+ content.
But
yes, people get to choose what's in their personal libraries, but not in public libraries. Public libraries are for everyone.
Yeah.
So we celebrate the freedom to read.
Yay!
So what else are you reading? You're still reading Fallout?
Yes, I'm still reading Fallout by Todd Strasser. I have no idea what... I think we might be reading The Handmaid's Tale in ELA either next or eventually. I don't remember when.
But this one's a free read, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Fallout is a free read. Oh. I talked about it last week, but it takes place in 1962, where it proceeds to, like, kind of talk about this alternate timeline where if, like, the H-bombs had actually been dropped on the U.S. and the Cold War had, like, turned hot, and this boy and his family and an extra six people are trapped in a fallout shelter that's only built for four, and they have to ration food and water and all that, and as I've continued reading the book, I'm getting to the point where slowly, like, people are kind of starting to fall apart. Like, they're considering kicking some people out. The boy's mom was injured, and she can't seem to speak or remember any of them. So she's kind of just kind of, like, blank because she ended up hitting her head, and they don't know what's wrong with her. So it gets pretty intense at some points. And then it also switches each chapter from the bunker to the outdoor world where, the bomb hasn't been dropped yet. It's the past. It follows his dad building the shelter and then them actually being in the shelter with the radiation outside.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very interesting.
It is.
I feel like with those kind of things where all of a sudden someone's like put into this very drastic change in their living.
Yeah.
You know, having to go live in a bunker all of a sudden, you start to think, what would life be like if I had to do that?
Right. And it's written very well, like in the chapters where they're in the bunker, I can almost like feel the claustrophobia, mm-hmm. and it's completely dark in their bunker.
Ooh.
Yeah. The lights go out when they first get down there.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. So they don't have any sense of time.
I don't know if I could handle it.
Yeah, I'd freak out.
Well, I have a book I've been reading, or that I just finished, called We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson. She also wrote The Haunting of Hill House, which I read last year, and the short story The Lottery, which is excellent.
It has a very cool cover.
It's very does. Pretty. Yeah, I decided I don't always buy books for myself, but I loved the cover so much that I was like, I'm going to buy this one so I can have it, like this exact cover. But yeah, so it is a story about a family, and it centers on a young woman who's 18 years old, whose name's Mary Catherine Blackwood. She goes by Mary Cat. And she lives with her sister Constance and their sickly Uncle Julian. And so in addition to Uncle Julian being not well, not able to leave the house, Constance also suffers from agoraphobia and doesn't leave the house except for to go to her garden where she grows food for cooking. And so Mary Catherine, or Mary Cat, is the one connection, really, to the outside world. She goes into town once a week, and there's a lot of animosity in the town towards her and her family. Going out into town is not a fun adventure, but she goes out to get food stuffed, to go to the library, so she kind of does her errands and then comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other real connection they have to the outside world is there's a woman named Mrs. Clark who comes for tea once a week. But you kind of learn slowly why they're so sheltered and why, in some ways, why there's this animosity towards them and why they're just the three of them. You slowly learn why they're sort of so secluded and a little bit about the way that the townspeople interact with them. In that 6 years ago, there was an incident at dinner where Constance and Mary Cat's parents, their younger brother, and Uncle Julian's wife all died from poisoning. There was arsenic in the sugar. Constance was accused of it, but was ultimately acquitted of the crime. And so there's like a little bit with the villagers where it's unclear how much animosity existed before this happened, but there's definitely that's part of it now, is that they have these like taunting rhymes that they yell at the family.
Huh.
And so a lot of the story comes about when their cousin Charles comes to visit. So if not Uncle Julian, but another uncle, the son of that uncle, and looks a lot like their father. And so Mary Cat calls him a ghost and a demon. And Charles starts to kind of form a connection with Constance. And Mary Cat is very suspicious of him and his intentions with the family, and that he's perhaps after the family's money, and tries to do some magic stuff to kind of protect her home and protect herself from him. So she comes up with some magic words that are secret magic words, or she, like, attaches a book to a tree.
It almost looks like it should be a graphic novel because of how the cover is drawn.
Yeah, the cover's awesome. So actually there is a fourth family member that survived the poisoning, and that is Jonas the cat. Sorry. I didn't mean to leave
cat.
Jonas out.
Aww.
All the descriptions of the book don't mention Jonas, but Jonas is a cat, a member of the family. I really like Shirley Jackson's writing style. I think it's, I don't know, I just like the way she writes. So even though there's not a huge amount of action, well, there's some, it's just really fun to read these characters that she creates. in their dialogue. I also really like the opening paragraph. So it starts, "My name is Mary Catherine Blackwood. I am 18 years old and I live with my sister Constance. I've often thought that with any luck at all, I could have been born a werewolf, because the two middle fingers on both my hands are the same length. But I have had to be content with what I had. I dislike washing myself and dogs and noise. I like my sister Constance and Richard Plantagenet and Amanita phalloides, the death cut mushroom. Everyone else in my family is dead."
Hmm.
That little paragraph really caught me when I first opened
it. It kind of reels you in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This is like, here's some things about myself. My family is dead.
Highly suggested. I loved this. I loved Haunting of Hill House as well, and The Lottery. Have you read The Lottery in school yet? Short story.
No.
Someday.
Well, the funny thing is, I think my teacher mentioned it today, and I must have tuned out briefly, like, just in the nice amount of time that it took her to talk about The Lottery, because we ended up actually watching an episode of The Twilight Zone today in class.
Interesting. I wonder if it was based on that. I'll have to talk about it later. But yeah, it seems like a lot of her books have this sort of isolation, kind of angry villagers. Like, I'm very curious about her life. There's an essay in the beginning of this edition of the book that talks about how it was maybe loosely based on her experiences or her time in a small town in Vermont where she lived, and that the daughters were maybe loosely based on her daughters as well. So, very interesting. I'm not sure how much else she wrote, though. I wonder how much more I have to read by her. I'll have to look her up.
Yeah.
See what else. But those are definitely her three most famous works. Hmm. And I guess this was her final novel as well.
Interesting.
So that's what I've been reading. I have, I think next up for me, I have a lot of graphic novels at home. And I'm not sure which I'll read first, but I have, there's a new Hilda book. There's Zeta the Space Girl and Mighty Jack have a comic that teams them up. I have a new one by Tilly Walden. I have Pumpkinheads by Rainbow Rowell and Faith Erin Hicks. And I might, oh, and I have a new Jen Wang, Stargazing. So I have all of these graphic novels just waiting for me to read them, but I felt like I had to finish this one. Oh, and I have to finish Pan's Labyrinth still. So once I finish that, I can dive into all my graphic novels.
Me and my parents have a table of books that we can read, and then we put our initials in the cover in, like, pencils so that we know when we've all read them, we can, like, donate them to those mini libraries around.
Oh, yeah.
Those that we're willing to get rid of, that is. Like, yeah. Wings of Fire isn't going anywhere. Yeah, we have a book, like, full of, like, things that we'd put in, like, the mini libraries near the Greenport Park, and I think there's one near the sheriff's office, too.
Yeah, there's also actually one right now out in front of the building that we're in front of the First Presbyterian Church.
Oh.
And there's one by the Chamber of Commerce down at Front Street, and there's one at Oakdale Park now, too.
I didn't know how many existed around here.
Yeah, there's a bunch of
them. And I don't know who started them, either.
I know who started the Greenport ones. And then the ones in Hudson, I think there's one in Hudson that the person from Greenport also did. And then the other ones in Hudson that I just mentioned are from Friends of Hudson Youth and the Hudson Literacy Fund.
Oh, okay.
And the Hudson Literacy Fund are the same folks that make sure that every child can get a book at the book fest.
Oh.
So that's another thing that they do.
That's great.
Yeah.
We love the free books at the book fest.
Yay. Me too. So yeah, so I think now we're going to move on to sharing some poems.
Okay.
With everybody.
Earth, Your Dancing Place Looks Nice.
Okay.
I'm going to read that one. It's by Mae Swenson. Beneath heaven's vault, remember always walking through halls of cloud, down aisles of sunlight, or through high hedges of the green rain, walk in the world high-heeled with a swirl of a cape, a hand at the sword hilt of your pride. Keep a tall throat. Remain aghast at life. Enter each day as upon a stage, lighted and waiting for your step. Crave upward as a flame. Have keenness in the nostril. Give your eyes to agony or rapture. Train your hands as birds be brooding or nimble. Move your body as the horses sweeping on slender hooves over crag and prairie with fleeing manes and aloofness in their limbs. Take earth for your own large room, and the floor of the earth carpeted with sunlight, and hung round with silver wind for your dancing place.
Pretty.
Yeah.
I have one called Speaking Tree by Joy Harjo. And there's a quote from Sandra Cisneros. I had a beautiful dream. I was dancing with the tree. Some things on this earth are unspeakable. Genealogy of the broken, a shy wind threading leaves after a massacre, or the smell of coffee and no one there. Some humans say trees are not sentient beings, but they do not understand poetry. Nor can they hear the singing of trees when they are fed by wind or water music, or hear their cries of anguish when they are broken and bereft. Now I am a woman longing to be a tree, planted in a moist, dark earth, between sunrise and sunset. I cannot walk through all realms. I carry a yearning I cannot bear alone in the dark. What shall I do with all this heartache? The deepest-rooted dream of a tree is to walk, even just a little ways, from the place next to the doorway to the edge of the river of life and drink. I have heard trees talking long after the sun has gone down. Imagine what would it be like to dance close together in this land of water and knowledge, to drink deep what is undrinkable.
Ooh.
I love Joy Harjo. That was from Conflict Resolution for Holy Beings. She's our poet laureate, our national poet laureate.
Cool. I have one called Evening by Dorian Lux. Moonlight pours down without mercy, no matter how many have perished beneath the trees. The river rolls on. There will always be silence, no matter how long someone has wept against the side of a house, bare forearms pressed to the shingles. Everything ends, even pain, even sorrow. The swans drift on. Reeds bear the weight of their feathery heads. Pebbles grow smaller, smoother beneath the night's rough currents. We walk long distances, carting our bags, our packages, burdens, or gifts. We know the land is disappearing beneath the sea, islands swallowed like prehistoric fish. We know we are doomed, done for. Still the light reaches us, falls on our shoulders even now, and even here, where the moon is hidden from us, even though the stars are so far away. Pretty. I almost got through that whole poem without stuttering, and then I lost it right at the end.
They're great. I have one called Fall by Edward Hirsch. Fall, falling, fallen. That's the way the season changes its tense in the long-haired maples that dot the road. The veiny, hand-shaped leaves redden on their branches in a fiery competition with the final remaining cardinals, and then begin to sidle and float through the air, at last settling into colorful layers carpeting the ground. At twilight, the light, too, is layered in the trees, in a season of odd, dusky congruences, a scarlet tanager, and the odor of burning leaves, a golden retriever loping down the center of a wide street, and the sun setting behind smoke-filled trees in the distance, a gap opening up in the treetops and a bruised cloud, blamelessly filling the space with purples. Everything changes and moves in the split second between summer sprawling past and winter's hard revision, one moment pulling out of the station according to schedule, another moment arriving on the next platform. It happens almost like clockwork. Leaves drift away from their branches and gather slowly at our feet, sliding over our ankles, and the season begins moving around us even as its colorful weather moves us, even as it pulls us into its dusty twilight pockets. And every year there is a brief, startling moment when we pause in the middle of a long walk home and suddenly feel something invisible and weightless touching our shoulders, sweeping down from the air. It is the autumn wind pressing against our bodies. It is the changing light of fall falling on us. That's from Wild Gratitude by Edward Hirsch.
Ooh.
I like that one. Yeah. I love fall. It's finally fall.
I know. I'm so excited.
Yay.
I can finally start burning fall scents because my mother made me burn one more summer candle before I could move on to the fall candles.
Summer candle?
They smell like beaches. I'm not even joking. That's how they smell. They have scents like pink sand and sunny beach or things like that.
When you say it smells like a beach, I just think of like seafood.
That would be gross. That'd be very strange.
It smells like rotting fish.
Well, I mean, seafood doesn't smell bad if it's like actual seafood, but I think sometimes, if things were scented like seafood, it would be very bad.
I'm not a big fan of seafood. Fishy smells. Anyways, that's about all the time we have for today. But we hope you have a wonderful week with lots of quality reading time and some fall-scented candles, perhaps.
Yay!
Have a good week. Happy reading.
Bye.